Welcome to episode 71 of the Men Who Save Football, the Dundalk FC Fancast. This is a post-match reaction to our replay victory after extra time over Finn Harps. Guys, we've been on a terrible run of form. The storm clouds had gathered. There was a lot of doom and gloom. And after Friday night in Ballybofey, where we seemed to have turned it around, but then had that catastrophic collapse in injury time, you know, it looked as if, you know, this run of bad form was only going to get worse and worse. Further bad news before the replay, a COVID scare within the squad, series of additional players missing. And when the team came out, I thought, you know, very few Dundalk fans would say, well, our chances have improved since Friday night. But yet, just like Dundalk FC, when it seems like, you know, the doom is doomier than ever and the gloom is gloomier than ever, we managed to turn around. And it felt like a pivotal game. It felt like this is a game where the season is either going to get a little bit better or a hell of a lot worse. What did you make of the performance?
It was fantastic, really. I mean, it was another cracking game. We were, I suppose, talking on Friday night that despite the feeling that we were left with after giving up the lead and ending up with a draw, that it was still a fantastic match on Friday, that there was a lot of quality, that there was a lot of, you know, entertaining play. And I think it was the same again last night. I mean, it started at a sort of frenetic pace. I think the short board goal shocked us all a little bit, you know, had us all worried given the state of the squad, the state of the first 11. To concede so early, like, that seemed like a real bad sign. And yet it was a goal of really great quality, you know, to give it its credit. A fine ball through that Sean Boyd controls very admirably, and he really rifled that shot into the back of the net. So, like, at that stage, I think we were all kind of worried, but, you know, we really kept playing well, pressing back Finn Harps, and Dundalk's equaliser was like something out of fairy tale land. I mean, the bicycle kick from Pat Hoopin back across the box, straight onto the foot of Sean Murray. I mean, it wasn't fired into the corner, but, you know, a wonderfully controlled finish. I thought that was really superb. I'm not sure if we're going to have a big rundown for, you know, goal of the season this year. The club feed, there was a long time where we went without like a substantial number of goals. But I think that one is really up there. Like, that was absolutely fantastic. And I think the big worry that we had previously going into, you know, these kinds of contests in the last few weeks, and given the state of the squad at the time, was fitness. Like, could we go for 90 minutes? Was there enough legs in the squad to really do that? I think it worried a little bit in the second half. You know, the tempo did seem to drop. The legs did seem to get, you know, really tired. But not more so on the Dundalk side compared to Finn Harps. Like, Finn Harps also tired a little bit. And we started the extra time just like there was a rocket underneath us. Like, I don't know what was said at the break, but, you know, we really controlled possession. We attacked, you know, with great intent. And then I think the goals that followed, you know, were just reward for everything that had happened. Like, the penalty, I think, Sami Benamar, you know, I think Adrian on the commentary was saying that, you know, he had drifted in and out of the game, that, you know, he maybe wasn't, you know, really looking the sharpest, but he just kept going. And I think he got his just reward again. Like, he beat his man in the box with, you know, sort of quick feet and won that penalty. And then Pat Hoopin took it away. And I don't know, what can you say about the Michael Duffy free kick then that followed that up as well? Like, it was just fantastic. So I think the thing that surprised me most then was that, like I say, maybe it was the effect of the goals, but Finn Harps looked very tired at that point. Like, we looked very much in control of the game. So, you know, I think any concerns we had about fitness were sort of dismissed. And it was great to see people like Sean Murray, who I think, you know, we worried that, you know, was his body able to give sort of 90 minutes of football? You know, for him to give almost 120 minutes, I think is really incredible. And, you know, he looked like one of the fresher people on the pitch at that stage. Like, he was chasing down goalkeepers and everything like that, you know. So I think he will be delighted, both, you know, with his performance, with the goal, with the fact that, you know, he played for that long. And, you know, we can just hope that his recovery was going well, because he looked like he was really one of the people who made the difference on the pitch. Like, he was capable of that extra little bit of quality. Some of his crossing into the box was superb, right? So I think having him back and having him in flying form is, you know, going to make a big difference in the season running.
In the context, it's an incredible result. Given, f- first of all, Friday. Given the general, you know, malaise, cloud of negativity, run of bad form around the club, given Friday's spectacular collapse, given our injury list already, given the COVID-19 outbreak, everything was against it. And I'll be one of those people, when I saw the team sheet come out, I was like, we are in trouble. But I suppose against all those odds, it was a brilliant result. You know, cracking game as well, great goals. Both sides really up for it. But I mean, that both sides, this would be huge for them, you know, to make it into the semi. Well, I mean, it's big for any club, but I think for both these at the moment, it would really, you know, make the season. So both sides up for it. I think Martin's right. I think one of the big things about it is that we seem to outlast them for energy. And which is kind of maybe in contrast to Friday, because obviously on Friday, it was the last 15 minutes, heads dropped and we got put to the sword. But Dundalk last night kept going. I mean, I know, Ken, you were at the game, so you'll probably be able to talk about the atmosphere, but even on the LOI TV, you have to think that the crowd were a factor in that, in pushing them on. Because as Martin said, especially in extra time, they just came out all guns blazing. And I think you could really feel it from the crowd, you know, just even watching it online. Let's face it, Mayowe going in, you know, starting the game, frightened people. Not that people don't reckon he's a great talent, but just experience. I think he made a really good account for himself over the entire game. Maybe at some times early on he was under pressure, but I thought he made a really good account for himself. I thought Peter Cherry saved us, especially in the second half. And I think some really, really good performances. I think Pat Open as usual. I think people are beginning to really see the level of commitment he has, I think. So against all those odds, against huge, overwhelming, I suppose, negativity swirling around everything, and against Friday, just brilliant result. Brilliant atmosphere. I wasn't there, but brilliant atmosphere and some really great performances, especially as well from the youngsters. Delighted for them. And I mean, I think we were worth the win over the whole game. Yeah. A rare, bright moment.
Whereas Finn Harps got a lot of energy from their crowd at home on Friday, and that's always big in the cup. It's always a decisive factor. And that's why we'd be really hoping for a home tie for the semi-final, because there's very little to choose between all the teams that are left in it. The league table tells you how good everybody's season has been, but a home tie, really, really important. Last night, I think it was great that the crowd were back in bigger numbers. I think the team needed some sort of inspiration, particularly given all the factors that were lining up against them. When we saw the team sheet, I suppose there's stories all over the team sheet. Peter Cherry, once again, played a big part, pulled off a few crucial saves, delivered another performance where we didn't have to endure some kind of goalkeeping error that really knocked confidence and set us on the back foot. And there was moments when the game was very delicately poised and he pulled off an incredible double save on the line where I think the ball was like almost three quarters of the way, you know, over the line. Really kept us in it at that point, because you did have a feeling with confidence being so fragile that if Finn Harps were to get back ahead, it could have been curtains. But I think the big story was just in front of him. You know, the goalkeeper being the foundation of the team, we know that not having the soundest foundation has really cost us this season. I would expect Peter Cherry now to be the number one keeper for the rest of the season, barring injury or some catastrophic loss of form. I think he's delivered over the last two games and he looks to be our best bet from the other guys who, when given the opportunity, haven't quite grasped it. But the big, big story, and probably the one that was the source of most concern, was when Dundalk fans saw the centre-half pairing with Mioa Animashin and Daryl Leahy. We have an under-21 international, but he's usually a left-back. He can play at centre-half, but when we put those two guys together, we know that Mioa has had a few cameo appearances. He's played a defensive midfield. He's done absolutely nothing wrong. He looks to have the build and the physique and the confidence to be a really promising prospect. But I think most people would have thought that throwing him in at centre-half in really a season-defining game was asking a lot of a player who was, you know, at the beginning of his career without a great deal of match time. And indeed, that defensive partnership, which had never played before, to my knowledge, could have potentially been a vulnerability. And of course, the last thing Dundalk fans wanted to see was an early Finn Harps goal. And that naturally is what happened. A rainy cross into the middle just drops exactly between Leahy and Dummigan. Instant control from Sean Boyd, rifles it into the back of the net. And you think, oh no, nightmare start. This defense could be in for a very long night. What is kind of remarkable was that Dundalk really just ground their way back into the game. And there were moments with the game, it probably won't be remembered for great quality. But I think it was a great contest and a really important game from a kind of point of view of where our season goes from here. Because we did sort of begin to kind of work away. Our heads didn't go down. Cameron Dummigan got on the ball a lot. When we played it short, when we began to get passes together, I think we were clearly the better footballing side than Harps. Harps look to be like they have Barry McNamee as a creative force, but most of the rest of their players are physical, they're energetic, they're hardworking, they're well organized. And that was really what they had to offer. But I think if we could have turned that into a football match, and the more often we did, it always favored Dundalk, who had probably the technically better players. You saw how good Will Patching could be when he combined with Dummigan, and also Hoban dropped deep to pick the ball up. And they really struggled to kind of get the ball back from us at times. But there were plenty of periods of sloppiness as well. But I think we did enough to earn that chance with the quick show in from Duffy and the improvisation, the bicycle kick from Hoban to centre, and a really calm and measured finish from Murray to get ourselves back into it. And then it was just a very even contest. I think whenever the game turned into a long ball game, it favoured Finn Harps. And unfortunately, we did facilitate them in that. We know that their main weapon was long throws into the box. And unfortunately, we gave them an awful lot of those as well. So it was a game that could have gone either way. But I think to see our kind of centre half pairing weather that storm and not concede again, and particularly Mayoa to sort of grow visibly in confidence so that he was winning more and more tackles. He was judging balls that were being lodged into the box. And after that kind of nervous start, had a really increasingly influential presence in the back four. And I think I think he got a lot of credit because he's such a young player and he put in such a sterling performance. But I think Dara Leahy also has to get a lot of credit because he quietly went about his business as the other centre half of that duo. And Harps didn't break us down again, despite many nervous moments. And there was this 25-minute period in the second half where the game was essentially quite messy, quite long ball. It looked like Harps might get something from all these balls into the box and their big men getting on the end of them and several goal-mouth scrambles. But there did seem to be some miraculous transformation once we hit extra time. I think once we got into our stride in extra time, we played much more football. We were much more composed. We saw that Patching became increasingly influential, as did Murray, even though clearly his energy levels were depleted. And I think when the goal arrived, we had earned it because Sami Bedamar was always a threat. Things weren't necessarily going right for him. You know, we had a habit of kind of conceding possession or carelessly conceding possession, turning it over. But I think, you know, when Patching finds him with that long raking ball and he gets one-on-one, you know, every time you take on a man and against tiring defenders and some of them not all that young, there's always a possibility that somebody will throw out a leg and bring you down. And that is pretty much what happened. And when you've got players like Patrick Hoban in the team, you can take advantage of that. So there's a interesting combination of our young players stepping up, but also the players that really sealed the victory were the quality experienced ones that we still have. Murray's finish for the first goal, Hoban's finish for the penalty, and of course, what can you say about Michael Duffy's finish? Pure class act.
Huge credit to the defence. I think that not only did they, you know, sort of weather various storms and things like that, but I think, you know, the big risk that you saw in there is that, you know, Dara Leahy is not a particularly big defender. If you're looking at what he's up against in the form of Boyd and Owolabi, right, they're two of the biggest, most powerful sort of centre forwards in the league. And your expectation seeing that is that, you know, he's going to be constantly under pressure from them, as particularly like they have a habit of launching long balls into the box from, you know, throw-ins and set pieces and things like that. But at no stage did you really feel like we were being bullied in that department. Like, probably, Cherry's double save was maybe the one time they got somebody free at the back post. You know, a good Denver header, probably a little bit unlucky not to score. But aside from that, like, there wasn't a sustained period in the game where you felt like that Dundalk central defence pairing were, like, really under pressure. And I think Maioa Animasun is probably, like, his performance was almost encapsulated Dundalk's overall performance too, that, like, he started a little ropey. Like, there was a few times he either let the ball bounce or, you know, sort of didn't maybe control it when he could have done. But as the game went on, he looked more and more comfortable. And, you know, by the time that we got to extra time and things like that, you know, there were balls down the pitch towards Owolabi that in the early minutes of the first half were causing him real problems. And instead he was calmly, you know, sort of collecting those, beating Owolabi, playing a 1-2 with somebody and, you know, sort of striding towards midfield himself. And really you could feel the sort of the confidence surging out of him. And I think it was the same of the team overall, right? That we sort of, we had to weather this early storm. We had to play our way back into the game. But the longer it went on, the more that you felt Dundalk were really, you know, the team that were going to go on and win this game and score goals and things like that. And yeah, I think, as we said, in contrast to previous weeks, that comes as a bit of a surprise, but a very welcome one.
Yeah, I think the physicality of the Finn Harps team and the sort of, you know, they must be the tallest team in the league, despite all the kind of tall players we have. And if you looked at the matchup between Shane McElhenney and Patrick Hoban, like Shane McElhenney is head and shoulders above Hoban. And we know Hoban is a fairly physical player. As regards the height and width, Shane McElhenney just seems to be, you know, almost a different species. But yet Hoban was totally physically capable of shielding the ball from him, collecting it and bringing other people into the game. And once again, I think he proved his quality and his leadership capabilities last night, because I think last night was really not so much a footballing battle. Finn Harps are a well-organized, principally physical side who have a more direct style. And obviously, you know, they were highly competitive in both the ties. Really, the battle last night was psychological. It was, could Dundalk dig deep to find the resilience and the resolve to overcome this bad run of luck and bad run of confidence and ever-spiraling confidence, and particularly the sucker punch of the two late goals? It really was a question of character. And I think they really dug deep to show the character that is still there. And we had that combination, like I said, of young players stepping up and giving performances that, you know, they can be very, very proud of. Players being asked to play out of position in positions of key responsibility and acquitting themselves very well. And of course, the old reliable warriors that have, you know, several league titles behind them, like Duffy, like Oban. And Greg Sloggett also getting a lot of praise from fans as well for his industry in midfield. I think it's just a really great night for the players that they finally have turned it around. It's also a really big night for Vinnie Peart, because if you go back to full time last night, I think if it goes another way, you know, for the bounce of a ball and Finn Harps managed to get their noses back ahead, I think we'd be waking up to a much, much tougher landscape this morning as Dundalk FC fans than we otherwise are. I think given that result, given we're in the semi-final, there should be a lift in morale. We can now look forward to the run into the season and hopefully begin to get players like David McMillan back and Daniel Kelly back and see a stronger squad with a little bit more options for crucial league games and also another potential run to the cup final. It really was a key result for Vinnie Peart, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. And I think you're right. It's a psychological battle. I mean, we've talked recently about confidence. And I mean, we keep seeing each week that on paper, the squads we're sending out, I mean, that was probably one of our weakest squads we sent out. But in previous weeks, we're like, you know, looking at the team sheet saying that is a team that can take on most teams, any team in the league, we think. We've always stressed a player for player, we've a very strong squad. But we've seen the idea of going a goal behind and the heads dropping. We saw Friday, you know, a complete collapse in form. To go a goal down so early as well, it's almost like a continuation of Friday's end. And you're like, I mean, I'm not going to lie. When the first goal went in, I thought this is over. You know, we are out of the cup. But it is definitely a massive factor of psychological. Because if we're going to put down so many of the losses, that psychological element that we've talked about, the confidence, then I think last night was definitely the opposite. I mean, you could see it. They were playing with confidence. As the game went on, you know, they began to play with more confidence. The defense tightened up more and more and more. And in extra time, we were well on top. And I think, you know, if we're gonna start questioning Vinny when things are going wrong, I think we have to give him his credit when you see a performance like that, because they were clearly up for it, they were well organized, and what he had, sometimes I use the analogy of with the pieces he has to play on the board. He had a very depleted set of pieces and pulled off a fantastic result. And I think you're right. Had we lost, I think today would be very, very, very different conversations going on, because that is the season over. I mean, the last thing going is survival, which no doubt we'll talk about in a bit. But, semi-final, everything is to play for. All the cliches, I guess, but everything is to play for. And, massive credit.
Given the result, and not to overplay it, but there did seem to be a kind of lifting off a black cloud that's been over the ground. Great scenes of celebration with the fans, shed rocking again, big crowd. Do you think Dundalk are now through their darkest hour of the season and we can begin to see some daylight?
I don't want to be the person who immediately, all this talk of podcasts and negativity, there's general talk of negativity around the club, but I'm going to say we have seen far too much over the past 18 months to begin that kind of talk. I would say, huge credit to the fans and especially the Shed, because I think they got behind the team from the start, and I think that was their intention. To not in a way, punish or be drained of energy yourself from Friday, but to almost the inverse reaction to Friday, which is, okay, we are going to be up for it, okay? And especially because Finn Harps was taking a sizable travelling amount for a Tuesday during the current situation. So I thought, the fans were really up for it. That clearly translated to the pitch. But how many... all I'll say is, I hope this continues. Your theory could well be right, but it has to be one match at a time, because how often have we seen heroics in Europe and just complete collapse on the Sunday? Friday is the league, it's points on the board. I'm just taking it game by game, to be honest with you. I think it's incredible. It was an amazing result. Semi-final is the semi-final, we'll see who we get. In the semi-final, you are 90 minutes from the final. All things are possible. We saw what happened last year, with Filippo, and during this massive malaise, put together a cup run. So it's possible. Dundalk in the past, have, won cups and, been relegated. So not that I want to say that, that's going to happen. But at the same time, I'm just going to say, let's not assume anything. Let's see what happens Friday.
I hear what you're saying. At the same time, I think it must be a huge lift to have the fans back in the ground sort of en masse, to have that sort of reception, that sort of atmosphere, and then to go on to win a cup tie like that. Like, that must be a huge lift for a squad that has been under pressure for a bit. Now, at the same time, I think the fixture list is not terribly favourable. Like, I think coming up next against Sligo Rovers and Bohemians, right, they're two tough fixtures that it's going to be hard to get anything from. But I think we're starting to see, like, in the squad, a couple of people returning and just that, like, extra little bit of quality that we didn't have a couple of weeks ago. So Sean Murray's return to fitness, Michael Duffy's return to fitness. Like, the two of them, you can see the extra threat that they bring, the extra quality that they bring. That's just taking a little bit, a little bit of pressure off that defence. And I think you couple that with, we already talked about Peter Cherry coming in, putting in a couple of good performances. It would still be nice to see, a clean sheet here or there. But I think if, those things combine, I think a little bit more potency up front, a little bit, sort of more resilient at the back. I think there's, results could easily start going in a different direction.
I just detected something about last night, even in the build-up to the game, that this had the feeling of a last stand. There was so much negativity, particularly after the meeting on Monday night and the previous performance and the previous week when we had the report from James Rogers, the interview with Bill Hultsizer, which was quite incendiary. I just thought we had reached a critical mass of, like, doom and gloom, that it almost forced the fans and the team to unite in this sort of existential battle, and we managed to come through it. And I just think now perhaps that change of attitude will break the run of bad form. That was really important. Get a result on the board, an important result. Keep the season alive as regards hope. And now get into a phase where rather than more and more injuries piling up, to perhaps looking forward to some of these players maybe being available for the crucial games like the semi-final and maybe even the final if we get there. So now all eyes turn to Friday. We've got a game against Sligo. I think the performance we put in Sligo, we have something else to put right, rather like the performance in Ballybofey, where I think the team may have felt the need to put right a game they should have won. I think we're well capable of getting a result against Sligo. So I'm going to back us to go on and hit a little bit of form here and get a result there that will pull us maybe clear of that relegation zone and allow us to enjoy the cup for as long as that run lasts. Of course, the 1903 Supporters Club had its inaugural meeting the night just before the game. It was an unusual meeting, an interesting meeting. Lots of talk on it on Twitter afterwards. And also there's been a report that's now gone out in the media. I think James Rogers was there. The other podcasts for the club were there. And I was there myself. Now, basically what was interesting about it, the club didn't have an official presence. Apparently there had been, the chairman of the Supporters Club, Brendan Ogle, spoke very eloquently and very clearly. He had a delicate job to do because I think the Supporters Club has tried honestly to engage and work constructively with the club as best it can. And it seems to have got some noises about cooperation and collaboration. But apparently there seemed to be over the weekend a tremendous amount of shilly-shallying and dithering by the club as to whether or not they'd be involved. And apparently this went from various extremes whereby, you know, Bill Hulsizer would be there virtually or another employee of the club would be there. And then that was withdrawn. And then it was back on again, but with different personnel. And then the whole event was requested by the club administrators to be postponed. And when they were told we were going ahead with it anyway, the Supporters Club was going ahead with it anyway, it was back on again. So I think, you know, personally, I was not really disappointed that Bill Hulsizer didn't appear on Zoom, because I don't think it would have helped things to have a kind of another iteration of his public utterances, particularly live to an audience. Because if he was going to come on from Florida to tell us that everything was fine and we were being too negative, I don't think that really would have helped things. I think the fact that the club chose not to be there probably gives us an accurate picture of where we are right now. And that is that the fans have to organize themselves. They have to get their supporters club up and running and an organized group that has structures and has rules and has an ability to articulate the sentiments of fans in as constructive a way as possible. But I think, you know, we probably have good people on the committee of the Supporters Club. I thought Brendan Ogle, with his trade union background, really that's going to be very useful, because I think the Supporters Club is going to be functioning like a trade union. It is, by the very nature of the current regime, going to have to be somewhat antagonistic to it. I mean, it's going to collaborate, obviously. I sense there's a great desire for collaboration from the Supporters Club committee to work with the club. But there's probably limits to how possible that is. And I think there are moments where collaboration will be possible on improving the match night experience, on basically broadening the appeal of the club to the community, re-engaging with the community, getting deeper roots from the club into the community and bringing new fans in. I think all of that are matters of mutual interest, but there are clearly matters of divergent interest. And I think that was evident by the fact that nobody from the club or associated with the club chose to turn up last night. Now, maybe that's just my own personal reading of it. What did you guys make of the non-appearance of any official from the club at the Supporters Club launch?
I think it's unforgivable in a way. And as you said, though, it more or less sums up the situation. That itself tells the story. You know, the 1903 is really well organized. I think it's gone about everything so well. The fans are doing their side of it, and the club can't even be bothered to talk to them. It tells you everything you need to know. I would say, yeah, that Bill Holzheiser coming on Zoom probably would have descended into farce pretty quickly. I think the fact that Jim Magilton wasn't there or someone else from the board it speaks volumes. I think anyone other than them, though, would have been made a scapegoat, because I think anyone other than the chairman or the director of football, whatever that role is, I think would simply have been made a scapegoat for problems we know happened right at the very top. So, but yeah, I think it says everything you need to know, that the club did not bother. I mean, I think everyone involved in the 1903, is doing a great job, and they can't even be bothered to talk. It doesn't bode well as for the future either, because I'd say, just say, peak six, the Holzheisers are here to stay for the foreseeable future. Then the 1903 have a massive part to play in things like match day experience, communications, all that kind of stuff. And I think they can contribute greatly to that, which, as you said, are of a mutual benefit. But I think that it's going to be extremely tough to do that when the other side of the equation won't even talk to you. So you want to help improve match day experience, which, as you said, helps everybody. You know, everyone benefits from that. But if the other side can't even be bothered to speak to you at your first public meeting, it really bodes, poorly for the future. And it just speaks volumes about them.
I don't know if I would say that's entirely fair, because I think there was some suggestion that at least Bill Holzheiser wanted to talk to the supporters club on Monday night, and might have been prevented from doing so by other people within the organization, right? So I don't know if this is true or not, right? This is what I read online. So I don't know, that could be true or not. But I wonder if there is disagreement within the club about how to engage with the supporters club, right? So at least the supporters club so far, I think, has done a really great job of presenting a unified front, right? There are probably tens of different opinions within the supporters base about what should be done, about how much influence the supporters club should have within that. But I think the committee have done a good job so far of sort of articulating exactly what they want to work on, exactly where they expect to be involved, exactly who they want to communicate with. By contrast, I think the club, on the other hand, has this sort of air of who should we send out, like who's representing us, we don't really know, are there different viewpoints within the club, is it safe for those people to be free to express their opinion at the time, or will that, you know, sort of cause more problems? And I think there's a sense that, you know, maybe unsurprisingly, at the club there is much less of a united front. There are people with divergent opinions who are really sort of struggling to agree on what the strategy should be for engaging the supporters.
To tell you the truth, and at the risk of repeating myself, I was not disappointed, because I think had there been a club director, or had there been the chairman via Zoom, I don't think it would have helped. It wouldn't have helped for somebody to come before fans and say and pretend that things are great when they're not, and they're clearly not. And I think we did get an indication of just how sort of chaotic the current administration is when they took seemingly four or five different attitudes to the supporters club meeting over the course of a weekend as to whether or not they'd be there and who would be there if they were going to be there. So I suppose everybody who listens to our podcast knows we have said that it seems that there is chaos in the administration of the club. This would seem to suggest just more evidence for that. And it also gives Dundalk fans a very clear picture of the landscape that we're in. You know, 6 months ago, we did not have an organized supporters group. You know, we had a number of informal clusters of fans who kind of would be, you know, not really organized to actually represent the general fans' point of view. I think it's to be really praised of the people who have established the supporters club, re-established it and set it up and now formed the committee. It was very encouraging to see the committee fully elected up to full strength at Monday night's meeting. The job of work is to kind of build that organization. Now, there was about 70 or so in attendance, which was about as much as the Edinburgh suite could accommodate. But I think the job for supporters now is to kind of build the organization, build it in numbers, build it in activity, get active, get organized, and to build up sort of a presence around and within the club that is a sort of counterbalance to the to what has been going on in the boardroom, where basically one man ill-equipped to make decisions has been making them with no counterbalancing voice, it seems. Now, we all know Peak Six may stay, they may go, they may sell, they may continue, they may change the chairman, probably not. They may change their strategy, they may not. All of that is really within their control. What is within the control of fans is the growth and the increasing organization and weight of influence of the supporters club. And I think Monday night represented a very good start as regards the kind of snapshot that we got of what currently the relationship between fans and the administration is. And of course, I suppose to give them some credit, the mood has lightened considerably with Tuesday night's result. Perhaps nobody from the club really felt they could turn up and defend what has been going on, and they perhaps had a they probably felt it would be too uncomfortable to try and come in and justify what has been going on, particularly in the context of a very bad run of form. Who knows? Maybe if things are a little bit better results-wise, we might down the line have somebody from the club who is willing to actually interact directly with fans. But there was just so many odd things about that. Not only the shilly-shallying of the club being involved or not, but also the withdrawal of an open letter on legal advice is very peculiar. So it sort of muddied the waters, really, as regards, you know, who is in control, who is making decisions. Why are lawyers getting involved in what is essentially a open letter to address non-legalistic issues of just, you know, general interest to fans? It all seems very peculiar right now, but dysfunction behind the scenes would not really surprise anybody who's been in Dundalk and seen how things have gone on and off the field of play over the last 18 months.
I just hope this letter leaks. I think, you know, that, you know, if someone close to the situation could just land something in an inbox, maybe it would be, you know, between us and them. But that's I'm making a public call to get it there. But yeah, I like if that is true about the open letter, like in one way that is both shocking and not shocking. It's shocking that the club is involved in a situation where the chairman is going to write an open letter to fans and it's blocked by lawyers. I mean, that's kind of an insane situation. But it's also not shocking that our chairman would say something in an open letter that might have to be censored, given some of the things he has said in the press. So, you know, I am both shocked and not shocked by that event. Nothing shocks me these days when it comes to the upper administration of Dundalk FC. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's a sad state of affairs. We are not shocked by your chairman not being able to address fans for legal reasons.
Well, to tell you the truth, to be as humane and as charitable as I can muster, if I was a colleague or family member of Bill Hulsizer, and he told me he was about to go live to a room full of Dundalk FC fans, I would advise him not to do it, that it might not be a good experience for him. So I can understand why somebody intervened to prevent that, because given what he had said in the press the previous week, I don't think it would have been good for anybody for that meeting to take place on Monday and for a room full of Dundalk FC's fans to be presumably told that everything was great and he was doing a wonderful job. I just don't think that would have been good for us or good for him.
It could have been like a scene from Orwell's 1984, with a big face appearing on a screen telling you all that everything was fine and, you know, all is well and return to your homes.
Well, funnily enough, if you saw the footage or the still photographs from the room, that was very much the vibe. We had the huge telescreen up behind Brendan Ogle sat at the top desk with speakers either side. And that would have been the screen on which Bill Hulsizer's face would have appeared in a rather, you know, kind of bizarre 1984 like sort of setup.
I think it would have been an amazing image. I think it could probably been the image of the season. You all summoned to hear an utterance
in ranks and files, you know, to be told that tractor production was up and the harvest had never been greater and the war with Oceania was going really well.
Yeah, we have always been at war with relegation.
Anyway, all I'll say is I think it was probably good for everybody's sake that the meeting went off as it was, because what was said, despite, you know, I think we dodged a negativity landmine there, and what was said was, you know, grim, but it was real, it was true, and there is a certain positivity in knowing the work that is cut out before fans. We know the situation we're in. Probably one of the big takeaways was that we need a supporters club, whether Peak Six stay or whether they go or whether there's new buyers coming in, a vibrant, active supporters club with lots of participation and lots of members just looks like it's an absolute necessity for the club survival at this point. So, you know, we've all joined. I hope anybody else who's thinking of joining joins. And we look forward to seeing that organization grow and become more influential towards the latter stage of this season and also in the planning for next season, because we know that that is something that we're going to have to think about and talk about very soon. Speaking of the upward tick in positivity, going to Twitter, we have a semi-positive post on Twitter from Simon Blackmore. He says, we were much more solid at the back. Mayo was more impressive and aggressive than some of our other centre halves this year. Cherry is definitely the better of our other keepers. We're still in an absolute mess of Hull Sizer's making, but it felt good tonight. Shed stayed behind the team till full time and beyond. Stephen Todd, once again, has praise for Mayoa. He said, young Mayo at centre back deserves a special mention. Really mature performance for a kid that's only turned 18. What a slog, but they wanted it more in the end and deserved it in the end. Francis Carolyn said, great performance tonight. We grew into the game as first part of the first half was nervy, but we took control in the latter part of the second half. Some of the younger lads stood up, very impressive. We go again on Friday. The crowd made a big difference. John Cotter says, the best night in Oriel for a long, long time. Best team performance of ages. We wanted it more in the end. Every single player put in a great shift. Jason McKeown has come in to say, it's not to be sniffed at, but a full shed is worth at least a few wins this season. Hoban immense. Sloggett was dogged. And Mayo was brave. We're not dead yet. Don Dalgan comes in to say, great to see youngsters being blooded and young Mayo superb display, despite a few nervy moments. But what a prospect that young man is. Hoban played the true captain's role, leading from the front. Literally and metaphorically, Greg Sloggett was superb throughout. Aidan Connolly comes in to say the team played out of their skins tonight. All round a great night. Peter Cherry was confident. He saved us a few times. Good hands working the defence to keep them out. Greg Sloggett was brilliant, as was young Mayoa. He was my man of the match. And Brendan Ogle, chair of the 1903, came in to say incredible performance in the circumstances. And indeed it was. So on that tidal wave of positivity, I'm going to thank our contributors for tonight. Everybody who contributed an opinion on Twitter, thank you very much, guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Martin Mullen, and also Rory Murphy, for your contributions. And we will look forward to Friday when we have the draw for the semi-final of the Cup at halftime, coupled with what will hopefully be 3 points on the board against Sligo Rovers. But for now, we'll leave it there, and we'll be back to talk to you on Friday after the Sligo Rovers game. Hey, all the way. Let's hear for the band. This ain't the face.